out of life, service to mankind, and we work towards it, and we have direction, and we don't wander. And another thing the faith gives us is happiness. Abdu'l-Bahá says, "This is the age of the blessed perfection. If we are not happy in this age, for what other age do we wait? For what other time do we look?" It's this knowledge of the time we live in and the situation of mankind and the most great peace ahead that gives us an optimism, a happiness through which we excel in our work and our very lives. So we must be a living sacrifice to the cause of Baha'u'llah. Abdu'l-Bahá has said, "Service and love for mankind is unity with God." Now that we know our purpose, our direction, deciding about careers, education, should be much, much easier, because we can see each direction, each pathway, in light of this purpose. And through prayer, meditation, and action, we will take the correct path to service of mankind.
The contrast between present-day society and the Baha'i world of the future was pointed out by Dr. Hussein Danesh, a member of the National Spiritual Assembly of the Baha'is of Canada. His address, "Youth, Their Identity and Service to Mankind," reminds us of the reality of man, which young Baha'is must grasp in order to carry forward our work in the world.
What is the reality of man? One of the first responsibilities that a Baha'i youth has, and by that matter any youth has, is to come into grips with the fact that man has a spiritual nature. The spiritual nature of man, the basic goodness of human beings, the continuation of life of man beyond this life. The fact that this life on this planet is only a part of a much longer journey. Those facts have to be understood by every young individual. And when I talk about young, I mean 3 years old and 4 years old and 5 years old and young older. They have to understand these principles if they want to sit back and be relaxed in the work of their everyday activities. However, if they are going to carry with themselves the burden of the fear of the end, then they are not going to be able to put all of their energies on the very important tasks that every Baha'i has in this world.
Dr. Danesh speaks of the two ingredients which characterize our adolescent society and how a Baha'i community will alter these.
Competition and power have been the two signs of our society for a long, long time. As a matter of fact, in the history of humanity, always these two have been the principal modes of communication between people. Who is more strong and who can become more strong? Power and competition. Therefore, majority of the young people in our times also are very attracted to power and competition. But the Baha'i youth have to study the writings and to see what kind of a society we are trying to create. We are trying to help humanity to move from its level of adolescence to its level of maturity collectively. In order to create such an environment, it is extremely important to realize that what would help the adolescent to move from his power orientation and his competition to level of maturity is to replace power with love and replace competition with cooperation. Now, in the Baha'i community that we want to establish, at the very core of the Baha'i community is going to be trust. What do we trust? We trust in nobility of man, in lack of existence of evil, in the mercifulness and justice of God. These are the things that we trust. What kind of a love we establish between people, therefore, is that type of universal love that has that point of attraction that all goes to Baha'u'llah. In that kind of environment, therefore, where the trust in that setting is ruling, in that kind of a situation, you do not need to use your power for the purpose of either protecting yourself or proving yourself superior over others.
As the conference continued, there were special features each afternoon at scattered locations across the campus. Workshops and seminars brought Baha'i professionals in many fields to consult with youth on setting the pace in a changing world. These small groups complemented the keynote addresses on the main topics of the conference. Another major conference theme was addressed by National Spiritual Assembly Chairman Dr. Daniel Jordan, who identified freedom, individuality, and personal growth as the new expectations for marriage. Here he considers the foundation of that institution.
Let us examine now the Baha'i wedding vow. It says, "Verily, we will all abide by the will of God." You know, in the old traditional wedding ceremony, the woman has to agree to obey the man, and till death do them part, which has inspired some people to facilitate the death process. Now, can you imagine why that won't work in the Baha'i faith? A faith that professes the equality of men and women? You're not going to have these women obeying these men. Are you? That's why both are going to obey God. Now, look what that does right away. First of all, when two people decide to obey the same principles, there is the basis for their unity, which is the chief ingredient missing in those marriages that fall apart, of course. Secondly, since one isn't tied to the other, they are free. Now, you know, I'm not going to go into a big discourse about the dangers of romance, which is a kind of an emotional attachment that feels good until things go wrong. And I'm not even saying that's an illegitimate element present in the relationship between two people who plan to get married and who do get married. What I am saying, however, is that attachment to another human being, particularly the one you plan to marry, is not a safe foundation for a marital union. In fact, you know, Baha'u'llah says we must all become detached. If you are attached, you are not free. By definition, you're bound to something. And since, as individual human beings, we are imperfect, why would we attach ourselves to an imperfection? Doesn't make any sense at all. Freedom comes from detachment. And Baha'u'llah says detachment means attachment to God through Baha'u'llah. Then everything else begins to fall into place, because Baha'u'llah says, if you love me, I will love you. And when that is right and good and whole, you will be a free person. And free people, in the spiritual sense, are not threatened people. They are secure. They are safe. They are then free to love the person they are married to.
Speaking of the Baha'i family, Dr. Jordan emphasizes the importance of proper child rearing.
To give birth to and raise a generation of children right is absolutely essential for carrying forward an ever-advancing civilization. In other words, out of Baha'i families, out of Baha'i marriages, must come forth children who are raised in such a way that they are the most stable human element in present-day civilization. Without that, the rest of the world will not come running to our communities when things get worse than they are now. And there are literally millions of decent parents out there who see their children going down the tubes of the old world order and would jump in the direction of any community that has found the secret of family unity, harmony, and love, and who understands the true nature of the marital bond as the basic strength of that family unit.
Following up on the same subject, youth keynote speaker Roya Amon highlighted the concept of equal rights and privileges in marriage. She quotes from the Master.
A spiritual marriage depends upon the equal participation and sharing of both man and woman. There can be no double standards for men and women. So see, there is the answer. And from now on, men will tell us, you can't take all these beautiful opportunities of seeing my child grow. I have the right to see my children grow too. And also the woman will say, gee, isn't it beautiful world? Now I can experience the outside world and bring new and beautiful information for my family. So you see, these two are getting now together and bringing more into the family than when it was a one-sided idea.
The world's been waiting for thousands of years for the promised one to come. He will teach us how to end all wars, and mankind may live as one. And now he's here, he is finally come in his full glory and majesty.
Majesty.
Oh, with a new name, he's come to lead us all to our spiritual destiny. He brought the master plan to unite the world. He brought a message from rulers and kings. Well, he spoke about justice and he spoke about love and spoke with God's authority. And now he's here, he is finally come in his full glory.
Dr. Sarah Martin Pereira, a member of the Continental Board of Counselors, speaking to the youth on maintaining a Baha'i perspective, makes them aware of their special station.
I like to think that the Baha'i youth are being called, you in your turn, to a higher form and a higher dimension of activity than we in the passing generations have ever been able to experience. Have you heard the story about the fact that Abdu'l-Bahá, when he was visiting in Teaneck, New Jersey, the area that we refer to now as the cabin, that he was seen walking up and down that Sunday afternoon in June, late June, and as if contemplative or meditative, until he came toward the house, toward the cabin, and then one of the believers approached him and said, "What were you doing, Abdu'l-Bahá, strolling up and down so long there alone at the edge of the gardens?" And he is purported to have said, "I was calling to the souls of the yet unborn generations. So I would take that to mean that he was calling to you and to me, calling us out of the realm of invisibility into the realm of visibility.
The necessity of facing up to the most challenging issue is an important element of Dr. Pereira's talk.
Now, the Guardian, in The Advent of Divine Justice, talks about the double crusade that Baha'is must raise up. He emphasizes the fact that first we must turn in upon ourselves and demonstrate a rectitude of conduct and a holiness and a chastity that are diametrically opposed to the moral laxity and licentiousness which defile the character of a not inconsiderable proportion of its citizens. And then we must move from that level of development into an interracial fellowship, completely purged from the curse of racial prejudice which stigmatizes the vast majority of its people. Abdu'l-Bahá had pointed out during his visit to the United States in 1912 and 13 how interracial fellowship would serve as a magnet to attract the other virtues that we're trying to build in ourselves as Baha'is. Diversity in the human race, the human family, should be the cause of love and harmony, as it is in music, where many different notes blend together in the making of a perfect chord. So we're along the way, and we can pat ourselves on the back because we've made great progress, but then if we're realistic, we'll say, or I'll say to you, you of the younger generation, lift high the torch and go farther than we have been able to go, though our intentions are pure.
2 months prior to the launching of the now historic Victory Weekend, Hand of the Cause of God William Sears made a special appearance at the conference to explain the vital role youth must play. In a stirring fashion, he extols the importance of teaching.
Someone has said, if you don't feel as close to God as you used to, who moved? There's no way to measure the teaching you will do between now and Rizwan. No way. Beloved Guardian said if we knew who we were and we knew who Baha'u'llah was, we would fall to the ground with our foreheads to the ground, weeping tears of joy just to be alive for a moment and to breathe once in this day that the saints and poets and all the holy ones of the past longed to come back for a moment and serve Baha'u'llah. And we would be like Ezekiel and Daniel, fall to the ground numb at the wonder of the glory of God. It's a tremendous thing that we are doing. God should help us. We're building His kingdom. We have a right to expect His help. And you, beloved youth, can build yourself a glorious spiritual legacy for all the worlds of God. Not because you're Georgia Jones Baha'i youth, not because you're Tim Washington Baha'i youth, but because of the youth in Georgia Jones and Tim Washington. Baha'u'llah says, life like a breath of wind flees the earth. What refuge then for a fruitless soul? Baha'u'llah says, even as the swiftness of lightning, your days shall pass and your body shall be laid to rest beneath a canopy of dust. What can ye then achieve? How can ye atone for your past failure? You won't be youth forever. I know, I'm an old man. How do you think I feel when I, and those like me, when I read these words of the beloved Guardian? Let teaching be the paramount and most urgent duty of every Baha'i. Let us make it the dominating passion of our life. Are we fully conscious of our responsibilities? Do we realize the urgency, the sacredness, the immensity, the glory of our task? Redouble your efforts. Keep your vision clear, your hopes undimmed, your determination unshaken, so that the power of God within us may fill all the world with its glory. Beloved friends, I was 14 years old when Shoghi Effendi, our beloved guardian, wrote those words. A youth, very young. So I entreat you with the words of Baha'u'llah. Appreciate the value of the days in which you live. They will come to you no more, and you will never have a like opportunity. And may you never have to say to yourself, where are the songs of spring? Where are they? For that time of life thou mayest in me behold, when yellow leaves, or none or few, do hang upon the boughs and shake against the cold, bear ruin quiet.